Yeah, let's do a short episode today. This is me, myself, speaking, Simon, and I'm about to deliver episode number 167. Correct, 67 of my podcast, Tischlein Deck Dich. Yeah, today, winter, I have to speak to you because it feels like I'm vermählt in a way. Vermählt, nice word. But yeah, I'm married to you, or somehow it felt with this episode number 161. I was proposing marriage to you in those poems. Poems I published there in the show notes. Also through my talk, I said I wanted to have sex, but more importantly, the poem in the show notes, and I said at the very end, I want to be your Nazi. And what does this mean? It's not even clear to me what did I write there, but okay. Get all out there, and of course, it was a reference to the first episode in English, where I talked about my idea for a novel with a Nazi soldier that was invading Ukraine, falling in love with a peasant girl there in a small village, and what is this love story gonna be? I mean, oh man, I didn't really develop this idea any further because it seems like desperate. I mean, the soldier will have to move on with his regiment, his battalion, and either way, I thought the most important difficulty is how could they communicate? I mean, they speak different languages, it's impossible, but. And it is so crucial for love, of course, the first step or second step. First step, of course, is looking into the eye. Yeah, that's possible. And so beautiful with Ukrainian girls. But then talking, maybe not possible. But then I came up with this idea. Yeah, what if he was a spy? Spy? German spy, maybe? Or even a Russian spy? Yeah, that would make sense. Of course, a Russian spy. Who intermingled Einschleusen, got himself into the German army and infiltrated them. And therefore he's there and he slowly reveals to her that yes, he can understand her, and although maybe he only speaks Russian and it's a little different than Ukrainian, but maybe she speaks a little Russian also. Or maybe he's from Kazakhstan or from Georgia, like Stalin, from another country, from the Soviet Union, but also had to learn Russian, of course, because it was this one central language after the revolution, the October Revolution, the institutionalization of the Soviet state. It was the language that unified all of them, like today, of course. English is the world language that unites me to you, Lilia, my flower. And I'll publish this episode number 161, Diana. Because, of course, this goddess Diana I was talking about in German, I hope you could understand some of the German parts, but I don't know how good German is. My colleague, or male colleague there that works with you, always says to me that he doesn't think it makes sense to invite you to a meeting with their clients. Last week, they went out there to Mannheim to visit this client, and then the other client around here in Stuttgart, but I told him, why don't you take her, Lilia, with you? And he said, oh no, she doesn't understand German, it wouldn't make sense, it would be boring for her. But I said, could at least ask her? I mean, and he said, oh, I mean, of course, I understand him, he's also sluggish and shy like me, but I wanted to convince him, but also, I'm of course not that offensive. I don't like to insist, of course, I'm this consilient, and but maybe, Lilia, you already understand a little more German, and of course this should be also motivation, these podcasts, that you can understand the erotic parts, because those are really the crucial parts in German, the language that is maybe adequate for eroticism. Maybe also Spanish, but English, I feel, is precise, is good for politics, for agitating the masses, and making them conscious about their real desperate situation. Unterjocht, oppressed. The masters have to become selbstbewusst, self-confident, self-conscious, even to realize they're part of the proletarian class, and this already gives them the confidence and the readiness for fighting, maybe through other theoretical work, but gives you motivation to do that work, theoretical work. Educate yourself as a communist, and then, yeah, it puts you in this place, but it can't be reached without the consciousness, the realization of what is your objective standpoint in this class society. But it was very political then, this poem I published under there. And yeah, now I think about it, it's nice that I get this agitated by the fact that I'm publishing my own podcast. I mean, it's nice. I always had this feeling already 2 years ago when I published around number 30. I think I texted, wrote a tweet that expressed exactly this feeling. It's like having sex when you publish an episode. No, this is now out of you, your theory, your thoughts, you put it out there, and somehow this is going to stand for you. And at least you delivered this, that I tried to be true to my communist or whatever philosophical exploration. Of course, it doesn't all have to do with communists. It's not all about politics, also about love and joy. This pure pleasure in art for the beautiful things and representations of reality that are somehow artificially brought into another texture, another form, but are only a reflection of your beauty, of course, Lilia. Therefore, I'm so productive now. I don't know why, but yeah, because this beauty confronts me now with this problem. What are we going to do in office? Is it going to be this way as I proposed then in the show notes of number 159? And of course, now this is a lot more intense than back then in the 30s, but still. It has to get normal for me, because I want to publish a lot, be very productive for you, but for all of the world, because talking to you wouldn't incite me that much. It has to be public for all of the world to listen, because only then I can rise up to my potential and also be that great shining star maybe in your eyes. And there I wrote a number 159. Maybe you would like to discuss this stalker problem you had there, our colleague told me about, but I don't know. If you'd like to approach me, I thought of writing a Teams message to ask you if you needed help there with the stalker thing, because I know it's nasty. I had a lot of problems with it myself, and I don't really know anything. That one guy that left the firm a couple of months ago, he, I think, also introduced you into the realms of Docker. And also he gave me all his knowledge, or maybe not all, he just typed the scripts, and yeah, that's hard to understand, but okay, at least explained me everything. But I'm still a constant mess with Docker, of course, filled up your space, your disks, and this is the main problem. And now, but now, of course, you fill up my disk, and this is too intense now. Thinking about love, therefore, I think this is a good idea to take it slow and take it in this business direction, as you proposed also back then on Telegram. And yeah, this episode was special, 116, when I also talked about this, what you said then on Telegram, that you're going to call the HR department if I don't leave you alone or constantly write you, and we should really concentrate on work matters. And yeah, then I said to you, you can block me, with no reason we should be in touch if you don't feel like it. And yeah, like, felt like you were also making this a drama, and okay. Yeah, then this is this way, you don't want to be in contact, but just, you're making this seem like we were really working intimately as colleagues, and now I was using this work conversation to somehow make an inappropriate proposition to you. This was totally unfair, of course, and therefore I felt also hurt, and yeah, this was hurting, but it was a maybe necessary step for us both, and yeah, it's just now maybe sometime we can discuss maybe also this hard feelings, or discuss simply the future or anything. I mean, we have time, and with the time it will all come out what I need to say or need to hear and understand from you. But right now, I mean, it can happen anything, even a conversation about Dogra would then be this shock. But why should I be ashamed of this fact that maybe my nature is that sensitive? That this is the thing about shyness. I'm hiding from the bourgeois rule that's so vulgar and violent. And this is exactly what I expressed in this Nazi poem that terminates with the word Nazi. And I didn't feel so good about it. Ah, therefore I had to bring it up. Mind, this poem was good, but then this last word, maybe it ruined it all. Bad stain history, but okay, I don't know. It's gonna go. But it was somehow erotic, didn't it? Okay, but never mind. Let's move on. And I gotta tell you, I was now out there on a bike ride. Oh, and was riding bike, and I somehow wasn't concentrating because my mind was wandering off about doing something illegal, because I was with my bike on a path that had a sign at the entrance of the path that it was not admitted for vehicles of any kind, not even for bikers. And I was thinking about this, and my posture was getting loose, and I thought, should I really be going here, or maybe get down from the bike? And I was like this, and then I thought, and I wanted to pee here. Anyways, I would like to search for a stop to a place to stop, wanted to pee also, but then it hit me. Oh, there was a there was this part of the tree, a trunk left there on the earth, because of course it was in a forest, a very small path, and there was down there. And it struck against my bike, and there, it was so hard, struck so hard on my shoulder that I thought for one moment, this ausgekugelte Schulter, from a knocked out shoulder, that people always tell how it's so painful. But I was just in awe for this one moment. I was thinking, oh no, I don't want to go to the hospital and everything. Ausgekugelte Schulter. But then I told myself, no, this is hurting a lot. Yeah, but it's not like, it can't be that ausgekugelt. Because there I felt it also, like in my shoulder, I heard this knock. I heard this like, going back, but like bouncing back. The knob, this thing was bouncing back, and but still it didn't bounce into the wrong direction, the other way, it bounced straight back, and there felt this, but I felt so shocked, and somehow I wanted to bring this up, because yeah, it's always like this. I feel that somehow, yeah, already there, of course I had smoked in the forest out there, and then now again, all this recording now these smoking episodes, because also the first one in English I found maybe not that bad. I mean, and I had smoked there, so yeah, it doesn't have anything bad. Of course, I see it's an addiction, I should somehow get rid of it, but somehow maybe this is my treatment, my analysis, because I mentioned this, I wanted this Grastagbuch, this diary of weed, and I never got to realize it. Literature, it didn't feel right in the literature, but maybe it's the right thing here. But still, simply I was smoking there in the woods, and of course therefore my mind and of course this is a Straftat, but in doppelt Hinsicht, of course it is also a crime, because I was on that path and it had the sign that vehicles not allowed, bicycles, but then I was smoking, and then I don't know, but okay. And therefore smoking gets you into a place where you feel not so confident, a little more insecure about yourself and reflect this and that, and always there's this insecurity, right? But then when you act up, when you speak, there's the secureness again, like in this one episode that was so outstanding. It's first in English, I thought, yeah, some of this poem reflected to that back. The old peasant girl mentioned this novel at the end. Yeah, winter. But wanted to tell you about this bike ride. So this simply is, this is a model, I think, a blowpause for a lot of things in life, that in a lot of situations you feel that you're not so conscious, not so confident, and then, yeah, you're not concentrated, something hits you, and you were wanting it to happen, maybe either way you thought, what am I going to decide? I want the world for me to take a decision, and there it was, just drunk on the path. Whew. And I still feel it, but it's okay now, it's yeah, just with this one moment in awe, mainly this thought, oh no, to the hospital, and that other people would see how much pain I have, that I'm an idiot. And with this, I think I gotta get to something concrete here, maybe read something. Oh yeah. Here I have another poem where I also talk about this double-knifed, double-directional, dimensional location, constellation there at work with you two girls. And let's read this poem, please. Written on 26th of June. Yes, I admit it, frankly and openly, that I was thinking also of other girls, especially our co-worker and your co-citizen and compatriot. Oh dear, but I had to do it in order to be sure I was imagining some erotic constellations. Why is it that one person seems attractive, but then the other one? And there always seems to be a difference, a delta, a variation that fosters love. This alternation, the change of the tides. One day you feel a bursting desire, the other day you feel languid. You, Zoriana, are splendid, vibrating of energy. But Lilia, this doesn't mean a thing. You will always feel this towards other men, and sometimes I noticed something on you when other male co-workers walked by. And I thought you found him attractive because you moved in a certain way, like rectifying your posture. Sorry. Yeah, this was an important part, this rectifying your posture, because I was always wondering, there is other men walk by, and what do you see in them? And this is the natural feeling I get with any girl. I mean, I fall in love, and then this question arises primarily. Therefore, I mean, it's necessary to not push it away and say, oh, this is so unfair and I never want to think of it again. But resist and think and reflect on this feeling of jealousy. Why is it? What could you do with them, with these other colleagues? And this, I mean, then leads to the polyamorous reflection, but you have to admit this feeling of jealousy, and this is what I express here. But this is okay, you can think of them or even touch them, play with them, if it is your desire. And I didn't want you to look that way at other girls or boys. It's normal to feel this, and I don't have the solution to all this. Thinking about sex makes me feel very clean nowadays. It used to be a dirty topic, but expressing everything, squandering and throwing out this dirt, ejecting the obscene fantasies and daydreams, helps me to feel prepared for real love. And what real love is, I don't know. I only have some expertise, not a thought. I only hope you can teach me, or we can teach each other, establish our common theory, and promise to be loyal to it. I can't even write anymore. Maybe my love is obsessive, probably. And it's a mistake to write that much. Instead of conversing with you, there is no perfectness, no everlasting unity. Every sexual act ends at some point, and the feeling of togetherness might vanish, but I'm not afraid of it. I'm encapsulated now with you. My heart is beating for you, keen to be together with yours. This was crazy because I'm crazy. Crazy about love and being taught by such a brilliant girl like you what it is all about. Oh, yeah, I don't know what it's about. Please, maybe I push this away, this question. What is there at the core of love? Somehow I gotta say, yeah, this discourse, somehow you feel it in you, like this day 161, I also expressed this, I wanted to have sex with you, and also the sexual desire makes you feel like you're more creative, you can do more, and have to be that, doesn't have to do with being a man. I think also a woman can feel this, and just should be encouraged more with what I said about these chess players. I think you can take this as a metaphor, like chess, and apply this to a lot of fields where you just should be more relentless, like those male chess players, and also obsessive, like in my poem I wrote about being obsessive. And damit kommen wir dann nochmal kurz auf Deutsch zurück, einfach. Ich sag mal, ich habe heute keine besonderen Abschlussworte an meine Gnete gefunden, weil ich heute einfach sagen wollte, ich Podcast rede für euch alle, und es ist einfach so, man nimmt immer die Schwungmasse mit. Man strebt auch nach der größten Zahl der Hörerschaft. Ja, wir kommen nicht raus aus diesem Liberalen. Wir suchen das Maximum, und da sind wir alle eingeschränkt, und man muss es vielleicht für sich produktiv irgendwie transformieren, diese Suche nach der maximalen Struktur, im Aufbau des Kommunismus, den ich ja theoretisch imaginativ durch meine Kraftquelle, mein Hirn, das genährt wird durch Früchte, wie zum Beispiel diese Passionsfrucht, die ich immer vor mir habe, mir gleich einzuverleiben gedenke, weil ich so schön verschrumpelt ist, immer so schön, ja, Passionsfrucht. Nun, liebe Leute, lasst uns doch einfach nochmal kurz in die Vulva-Theorie reinlesen. Weil, das kann ja wohl nicht angehen. Wobei, die Vulva-Theorie, das ist alles sehr... Doch, lass uns diese private mal vorlesen. Das gehört nämlich zur Poesie, ja, das habe ich hier entschieden, habe es in mein Poesiedokument reinkopiert, obwohl ich es bei der Arbeit angefangen hatte und irgendwann mal vorgelesen hatte, nämlich in Folge 160. Auch veröffentlicht hat, und da irgendwo, oder jedenfalls irgendwo in diesen Shownotes publiziert ja auch schon das letzte Gedicht, das ich jetzt heute vorlasse, aber das ist ja eigentlich egal, das sind organisatorische Verstrickungen, die ich hier nur erwähne. Da könnt ihr das also auch schon finden, oder wenn ich es hier vielleicht vergesse reinzukopieren, dann findet ihr es da jedenfalls in Folge 159 oder 160, da dieses gerade auf Englisch gelesene Gedicht. Und ich bin hier ein bisschen wirr, natürlich, ich bin außer mir, es ist wirklich ungesund, ich muss mich eigentlich die Gesundheit gewöhnen, habe ich die letzten Tage gefühlt. Und ja, deshalb einfach normal werden. Es muss was Normales werden, dass eine Podcast-Folge rauskommt. Und manchmal hat man einfach diesen speziellen Tag, ne? Das ist Sexual Desire auch. Und deshalb auch kommt dann mal eine bessere raus. Aber im Durchschnitt muss sich doch irgendwie aufheben. Und lesen wir hier also weiter. Da lasse ich also in Folge 160 schon den ersten Teil vor, wo es heißt, hier entern wir die roten Gebiete. Also, Soriana, bla bla, deine Beine sich beim Arbeiten. Und ja, das muss ich eben ausdrücken oder will es, warum auch immer. Jetzt drückte ich diese Folge aus und hoffe einfach, dass das dadurch irgendwie okay ist. Aber ich weiß ja auch nicht, Soriana, wie du das sehen wirst oder aufnehmen wirst und auch vor allem Lilia natürlich, aber ich fühle einfach als Poet, da muss ich immer weitergehen, ich habe keine Wahl, es ist einfach jetzt meine Poesie, meine Arbeit, der ich treu bin und ihren Prämissen und ihr beiden ukrainischen Blümchen seid ihr, also meine Prämissen, meine Grundannahmen, von denen ich ausgehe und deduziere weitere Schlüsse aus dieser Schönheit und Anmut ableite oder auch anderen weiblichen Qualitäten oder persönlichen oder allgemeinen Qualitäten jedenfalls, die ihr beiden ukrainischen Blümchen mir offenbart habt oder die ich mit euch assoziiere. Richtig, aber ja, also lesen wir hier einfach mal weiter. Und das muss jetzt einfach normal sein. Also ich werde auch nicht zum Ende kommen mit diesem Text heute. Bitte, steigen wir einfach direkt rein. Also, Soriana, wie gern würde ich natürlich deine schönen, gerade recht beleibten Schenkel beiseite drücken oder auseinanderschieben, sagen wir so, um einen offenen Blick auf deine gischtstäubende Prachtperle, deine Vulva zu erhaschen. Jene Vulva, die zwar äußerlich einer Muschel gleichen mag, doch wesenhaft vielmehr einem Seestern ähnlich und von den Fluten des Meeres genährt wird und sich doch anklammert an den Felsen mit monumentaler Kraft. Ja, da muss ich sagen, dass ich eine Metapher von Rambaud auch gelesen habe, die eigentlich viel besser war, der Seestern sich anklammert, aber ich verbinde das hier mit der Weiblichkeit, das füge ich dann dem schon hinzu. Aber sollte ich eigentlich auch nochmal nachlesen. Dieser Seestern. So weit, so verständlich. Verzeiht, liebe Leser. Ich muss ja so sein, werde gezwungen, bin sozusagen gekidnappt und kann mich nicht dagegen wehren. Denn an jedem Winterabend, an den ich mich so gerne erinnere, da standen wir hier zu dritt im Büro, die beiden Landsfrauen und ich. Und es war so ein wunderschönes Gefühl. Balsam für die zermürbte Arbeiterseele. Kurz vor Feierabend, als draußen schon die Nacht sich senkte, mit euch über Gott und die Welt zu plaudern. So wohl fühlte ich mich in dieser Dreierblase, um nichts in der Welt hätte ich je wieder herausgewollt. Und die restlichen Kollegen waren zum Glück ausgeflogen. Da jedenfalls keimte auch das Ressentiment in mir auf, wie immer gegen zu großes Glück, und ich versuchte, einen Grund dafür zu finden. Natürlich, ihr beiden, also ihr entstammt ja dem Schoße der ukrainischen Nation. Und ohne jetzt auf die Politik und Militärstrategie eingehen zu wollen, möchte ich doch betonen, dass mir euer abwartendes Verhalten sehr reaktionär dünkte. Ihr wartet ab, bis ich den ersten Schritt mache, euch zu fragen, wie es denn so gehe, kurz vor Feierabend. Dann aber nach diesem Schritt schnappt ihr zu. Da habt ihr mich in der Falle, wo ich so fest sitze, dass kein Entrinnen mehr ist. So also das mir bereitgestellte Problem. Natürlich will ich nicht, dass diese Unterredung je aufhört. Es ist zu angenehm, ekstatisch, lustvoll, einfach nur dem Verlauf dieses plätschernden Bächleins unserer Unterhaltung zu folgen. Aber dennoch, ihr verlangt von mir als Mann, Naja, was auch immer. Jedenfalls ein echter Mann zu sein, den ersten Schritt zu machen. Und machte ich nicht, dann entglitt uns allen dreien diese einzigartige Chance, diese überbordende Erfahrung des sozialen Lustspiels, des Austauschs von Worten und Höflichkeiten unter Kollegen. Also, da haben wir es. So, jetzt bin ich entschuldigt. Ihr wollt es ja so männermännlich, weiberweiblich. So sagte schon Effi Briests Vater. Und das ist scheinbar auch heute gängige Auffassung vom Leben. Ja. Ich glaube, an der Stelle kann ich dann dabei bewenden lassen erstmal. Yes, dear girls, Ukrainian girls, you too, especially my flowers, need to finish up this podcast now in English, I feel, because of course this text also treated you in a certain erotic way, and I hope you don't feel molested or anyhow, well, uncomfortable, but what I want to express sharply here at the end is simply this fact that in this conversation back in November, when we talked about your trip to Switzerland, I think, and everything, vacation, my trip to Athens, and you showed me your pictures, and it was so nice, this conversation at 4:30 or 5 in the evening, that I never wanted anything else but to be there with you too, and never wanted this to end, and thought, why do we do this every day, and need to be with you every day, and never would watch another woman. Of course, I have this special feeling about you, Lilia, but then in this constellation it feels wholly confusing. Why then, of course, it's still the special for you, but still somehow Soriana is also in our bubble, and I don't want to make any move or intention, but still, I mean, simply she's also there. But this is the socialist feeling, the general feeling that we're all individuals and proletarians, at least the vast mass of the workers that is depending on this work, and this work is exactly what has brought us together there. Therefore, this is already the proof that we belong to this class of proletarians. So if we somehow belong together in this also very special union. And I simply want to express and close this, that somehow sometimes pleasure can be too much and you can't take it, and therefore comes up surges this resentment in my head, and I think, why are you two girls always waiting for me? And then you snap right there when I make the first move, like this eating plants, snapping for a mosquito. And here, somehow you're like this, because then when I ask you how you're doing, then you never let loose and you always want to go on talking. Of course, I also enjoy this so much, and yeah, but why are you then this reactionary, like reacting always? It's an interesting term, because the French Revolution somehow brings this new idea into the world, and then the reactionaries are those in a time from Marx, for example, who still want to have the king back, the royalists. Royalists, loyal to the king, and they are reactionary because they only react to these new proposals of revolution, and of everybody should be at least in this way equal within a bourgeois democracy as we have today, which is a progress compared to aristocratic rule, but still not that progressed as socialism. We have to make these boundaries clear, the Grenzscheide, the Scheidepunkt, Scheideweg. But this was back then the struggle that had to be fought for a bourgeois democratic state where we're all equal under the law, and the bourgeois rules with a lot of money, but at least it's not these old aristocratic rules with justified by the divine rules by God. anthem. And yeah, money is more rational, this is the point. Of course it is rational and this all makes sense, or at least it produces a lot of goods. Of course also many people die of hunger and many people starving, many hundred millions not eating enough, but still on the other side it also produces a lot of things, and this is more rational than this religious belief that the medieval age and stuff was founded upon, and therefore the capitalism is a progress, but it's not the ultimate goal. We have to progress further into socialism, and this would be maybe clear the path for finally living there in communism. And what I said about that the workplace should also be natural, to have some small rooms or to have sex or love pauses, and this I mean is more a vision for the future. Maybe you can't implement it right away, also after the socialist revolution. Maybe people are not ready for it, but slowly you have to advocate them. You have to be ingenious about inventing new forms of education, and therefore I think that someday it could happen. And I have to bring people there to educate them about how to decide how to consume together. Maybe there's a limited offer of goods, and I think people could discuss, like in a village council, who is the one who should be granted this good, like maybe a strip of land to build a house on, because who can, who have only this possible allocations, and there we have to take scientific measures. But what I mean is that through education we somehow get people there through over decades in socialism, that in communism that is this far ideal utopia that can't be reached within one decade, it has to be really developed and prepared, that there we can all share freely, and then also sex will be much less of an issue, less of a problem and hurting than today. But maybe also this hurting creates lust today, and the people then will look back and be jealous. And I think, yeah, that just I want to say about this evening where we were, the three of us standing, somehow it's too much of happiness and luck and greatness or exuberance, cheerfulness there, that you want to find a reason again to be depressed, or be at least, yeah, to squander that away, push this away and say this shouldn't be like this at least. And now of course we're in this situation where we don't talk, and yeah, somehow this is then this neurotic proceeding I'm explaining here, and I'm sorry, but also you are to blame, at least as a, if we're that feminist, and but yeah, we should be equal. But I think I don't have to expand on this point. And with this, I think I made anything clear that was possible to make clear, although my head is not so clear, and therefore it's obviously not that much that is possible to be clarified. But I'm in the process of analyzing and transforming myself to whatever. I don't know, I'm like a lizard. I like to transform myself. And I have to publish out this episode. I gotta remind myself. Ciao and bye bye.